This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hi, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Harrington deal. Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
Knock on Wood, a number one R&B hit from 1966. By Eddie Floyd out of Stax Records over the weekend. That was announced that that's going to go into the Grammy Hall of Fame. They put recordings in the Hall of Fame, if you didn't know, and that's one of them that's going in.
So I saw that piece that you wrote today about, was it today or maybe it was earlier? I was catching up. Knock on Wood. What's the history of Knock on Wood?
It's a song that Eddie Floyd and Steve Cropper wrote in Memphis. I guess in 66, the record came out in 66, maybe they wrote it in 65, I don't know. But they wrote it around then. They recorded initially as a demo for Otis Redding, and for reasons I can't remember, I'd have to look up in Robert Gordon's book or whatever, they ended up releasing the Eddie Floyd version. The Eddie Floyd version became a big hit, top 10 R&B hit that year, and has really been covered a lot. It ended up being, there's a disco version of it a decade later that was a number one pop hit. Lots of people record it. Bruce Springsteen has done like big rave versions of it in concert over the years. Sort of an R&B standard.
Do we have a lot of others? Memphis has a lot of other singles that are in the Hall of Fame, I would presume.
Yeah, it does. I started looking at it and jotting them down, and I realized there's too many. It doesn't matter. There's like 50 of them.
Right.
And so not a lot of albums, but a lot of singles. Yes.
Yeah, that's the other point. So the album also inducted Big Star, right? Big Star's album.
Yeah, the number one record, their first album. Memphis is historically more of a singles town than an album town, in part because Memphis became a major music city before albums were even a thing. You know, you go back to the 1920s or whatever. And so Memphis more of a single city than an album city historically in music. But number one record by Big Star, and then Hot Buttered Soul, which was Isaac Hayes' second album, the one that made him a star. Those are the two Memphis albums, unless I missed something, that have gone in. And the Big Star one going in this year, along with Knock on Wood.
All right. So a lot of talk about the All-Star Game. Last week you told us, if people want to watch it, they should watch it. If they don't, they won't. You might have opted for a movie with your wife. Did you digest any of the All-Star Game festivities?
I saw the Mac McClung Stephon Castle dunks on social media, which is sort of the best way to consume that stuff.
Yeah.
As far as Sunday night, I started so the broadcast started at 7, and White Lotus premiere was at 8. And so I started watching it at 7 with the notion that I was going to, you know, flip the White Lotus, which my wife wanted to watch too. At 8, so I was able to see the first hour, which meant I saw the entirety of the first game, the one that Jaren was in.
Yeah.
But that took like 20 minutes, and so I saw 30 minutes of like just like soft shoe routines and Kevin Hart talking.
It's
and
nonsense.
Kevin Hart kept talking even after the game playing. Yeah. And why do these people love Kevin Hart so much? Like I needed a, you know, on NBA on the League Pass, there's different streams you can choose to watch a game. You can watch the home team stream and the road team stream and this stream and that stream. I needed a no Kevin Hart stream. I need a Kevin Hart's microphone muted stream to watch that stuff.
Yeah. It seemed ill-advised, there was not much basketball in all of that.
It was such a reflection, and I know people have romanticized the TNT stuff, and we love Chuck and Ernie and Kenny and all this, and I feel like we're like 10 years past due on that sentiment. It's just sort of a lingering thing. It was such a reflection of how self-involved all of that stuff is. Like, Shaquille O'Neal doesn't care about the game. She just wants to crack bowl jokes like the rest of the world cares about his fascination with bowl. And, like, they're giving each other awards, and, like, it's just so tired to me. I'm just ready to get away from that, and, like, let's get broadcast stuff, beyond the All-Star Game stuff. Let's get broadcast stuff where the broadcasters actually care about, like, what they're broadcasting.
Well, that's the thing. Honestly, and even the need to have so much Kevin Hart, it just seems like they're implicitly saying we don't care about the game. Panel's always crapping on the game, and then you brought in Draymond Green this time. I don't know if you saw what he said about the format crapping on the game. It was just everyone just wants to crap on it. Like, it's even the people they hire. It's kind of amazing.
There are plenty of people out there who actually like basketball and actually watch basketball and understand that it's actually not the reality of what's happening. I'm talking about the All-Star game, but broadly is not what people claim it is, like, at all, if you actually like open your eyes. And so, like, let's get those people doing games.
I'll say this. Ja tweeted over the weekend that watching Mac McClung's dunk made him want to get out there and dunk. It made me think there's no chance that Ja Morant will ever get out there and dunk, because he can't spend his time jumping over cars. No one would want him to, you know?
I don't want anybody to, honestly. So I've developed actual opinions about the dunk contest thing after watching that stuff over the weekend. And one of my opinions is a common opinion any people have expressed, and I will express it too. And another is something I haven't quite heard. But, like, and you can't really solve this unless you do have a dunk contest that has, like, John Morant and Anthony Edwards and Amin Thompson and whoever in it, right? So maybe it's just unsolvable and you should just stop doing it. But the thing that made the dunk contest, like, a real thing in the culture that mattered, one, the players in it mattered. I don't care about anything Max McClung does in a dunk contest. He's not an NBA player. You can find gimmick dunkers on YouTube who can do all kinds of crazy stuff, but I don't care. They don't play in the NBA. The thing that made it matter was the players mattered. It was an expression. It was an extension of NBA basketball, and it was players who mattered. I don't care. Max McClung can do the most amazing dunks in the world, and I do not care. So there's that part of it. The other thing, though, and this gets into a lot of the props and the gimmickry and all that, the thing that made, like, Jordan and Dr. J and Vince Carter, the thing that made that stuff great wasn't just the difficulty of the dunks. You probably look at a lot of the dunks now and say those are more difficult than the dunks those guys did. Mm-hmm. It was the artistry of the dunk. It was those guys moved through air in a different way, in a way that was sort of elegant and electric. And it was somewhat akin to dance, honestly. Like, when you think about dance, people talk about having good lines, right? The sense of you have total control of your body. And, like, even the Stephon Castle dunks, which I like better, if you, like, just click pause on some of those, they don't look as cool. Like, his legs are just kind of dangling or whatever. If you go back and watch Vince Carter and Michael Jordan, they look different in the air.
Right.
There's a level of athletic elegance involved that really captivated people. And, like, frankly, John Morant dunks like that in games. And so that's why
he looks different in the air. He definitely looks different in the air. Yeah. All right. You've got a mailbag, Chris. I will tweet it out. But the one that I went to immediately, because it's the most sports talk radio-esque of them all, I think, is... Someone asked you if Taylor Jenkins underperforms again his seeding, what is going to befall Taylor Jenkins at the end of the year? I'm honestly surprised you even took up this question, you did.
I mean, that's sort of my reframing of it a little bit. The question was not about underperforming seeding. It was, I don't know how the question was phrased, but I sort of turned it that way because that is something that they've done the last two times they've been in the playoffs. And there's, I think, if they end up, who knows where their seeding will be, but if they end up being the two seeds, like, there's a very good chance they underperform their seeding in the playoffs. And I do think, typically, a team underperforming its seeding in the playoffs 3 years in a row under the same head coach is exactly the situation in which a head coaching change is made. That is a very normal thing in the NBA. So I think that's, I think that should be acknowledged. Like that is when that happens. My general response, though, was I don't believe in context-free ultimatums. I don't think you just state on the front end, if you don't reach this certain thing, then this happens. I think you have to consider the context, and I assume the people making decisions for organization will also consider the context. And so we'll see what actually happens. Maybe they don't underperform the seeding, right? Like, let's not predetermine
right,
100%, that.
Yeah.
But I think the context of the team is such and has been as such that, and I've written this before, the story of the Grizzlies' quote-unquote underperformance in the playoffs to this point has really been more a story of overperformance in regular season. Like when you go back and you look at the difference between, like, if they were this seed and then they did this in the playoffs, and you really get into it and you ask, did they overperform what is normal in the regular season or underperform what is normal in the playoffs? At this point, it's been the former. It's been that, like, you're surprised these teams are this high a seed to begin with, not that this team didn't go that far enough in the playoffs.
Yeah, and I don't want to prejudge. Obviously, they may win their first round. They may win their second round. Who knows, as you point out. But if, right, for example, they once again, you know, are the third seed and they lose to Kawhi and the Clippers, it would be the same thing. It would be the same thing. And yet there might also be a certain amount of impatience with it, right? Like, and who knows how these decisions are even made then in there, you know, what Robert Parra is thinking on any moment. But it would be the same situation.
Yeah. If something like that happened. And again, that has not happened, but if something like that happened, it would 100% be a topic of discussion among fans, among media. It just will. Now, as an internal decision made by an organization, which is different from like a fan media discussion, I think the question that you would need to ask yourself internally is this a case of this roster is ready to go and a coach each week will take us over the top, which is the decision the Cleveland Cavaliers made last summer. They did not break up their roster. They decided this roster, this core is good enough. Let's tweak the coaching stat, the head coach, and see what happens. And that's what they did. They moved J.B. Bickerstaff out, Kenny Atkinson in, and they kept their core. If you're the Grizzlies in that situation, you have to ask yourself the same question. Is this a case where the team is ready and we need to tweak the coaching to get it over the top? Or is it a case where the roster itself needs a little more tweaking, a little more seasoning? My sense is that they're still a year away from that point that the Cavs were at last summer. Because even though they have been as good for as long with actually a little bit of a younger group.
Let me ask you one more question about this, because it's a point that Jeffrey made. He says in the NFL, you know, you often see the coordinators get fired first once something happens, and then the head coach is next, right? And so, again, if you just take that template and you apply it to the Grizzlies, what happened this offseason, the assistants all got changed, and so then if they underperformed, you'd wonder if Taylor were next. But some of that depends on, do you get the sense that, and maybe you don't know the answer to this, or maybe you want to answer it, were these changes forced on Taylor, or was he an instigator in the challenges and fully involved in all those changes? Do we have any sense of that?
It remains a little bit murky to me. My sense is that it was misread a little bit back in the summer. There was a point when, like, Mark Caffaroni was the head coach, and they brought in Kevin O'Neill basically to be the defense coordinator and basically forced that on Mark Caffaroni. And it was essentially a sign of a vote of no confidence in Mark Caffaroni and a precursor. Kevin O'Neill didn't end up becoming the head coach, but they did end up changing the head coach. I don't think this was that. I do think it was an organizational decision to change their approach to development and their approach to sort of their philosophy around offense. It was more specifically to, like, sort of those systems and processes and approaches. And I do think Taylor Jenkins was a party to that decision and the implementation of that. So I don't think it was just a, let's bring in some associate head coach that is sort of a head coach in waiting, or that is a symbol that things are fragile with our head coach. I don't think that's what it was.
All right. You mentioned Stephon Castle in the context of the dunk contest. One of the questions is, who's going to win Rookie of the Year? What's your analysis?
Yeah, I think if you, take a look at it right now, an objective look at it right now, Jalen Wells has the best case. But I think Stephon Castle, if I had to guess who's going to win it, I would sort of guess Stephon Castle. He's actually the leading scorer right now among rookies. He just had this nice showcase at All-Star Weekend, good performance in the dunk contest, good performance in the Rising Star game, where like he seemed like the main guy on the team, on the same team that Jalen Wells and Zach Edey were on, frankly. He was also a top five pick. He's on a team that, you know, is not a good team, but it's not a terrible team. It gets a lot of attention because Wimby's on it.
Right.
I feel like he is sort of the likely pick, but I also think it's a situation where it's jumbled enough that if somebody jumps up and like is averaging 18 points a game for 2 months, like, I mean, who knows, right?
Right.
Like, you know, if Donovan Klingman, who's now in the starting lineup, suddenly is averaging like 14 and 12 and three blocks for the next 2 months, and like Portland sneaks into the play-in, is he going to suddenly win Rookie of the Year? I do think there's a sense of my guess is that there are voters sort of looking around for something more exciting than voting for Jalen Wells for Rookie of the Year. But we'll see.
You can read Chris's full mailbag over at the Daily Memphian. I'll take one more basketball question from it, and that is, while we're speaking of rookies, someone asked you to examine whether there's much history of playoff teams with two rookie starters, and you discovered that the history is scant.
Yeah, I didn't go back pre-2000, so maybe there's something deeper in the history, but frankly, you go back that far, and it doesn't matter anymore because the game's different now.
Yeah.
And so the only example I can find of two rookie starters on a playoff team, and I don't mean like, you know, starting one or two games. I'm sorry, starting at least five games, so more than five games in the playoffs. So I'm sure you can find examples of like a guy got one start or whatever. But like regular starters, two rookie regular starters in the playoffs over the last 25 years, the only example I could really find was a Clippers team. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's rookie year. People may not remember he was actually a Clipper as a rookie. And he and Landry Shamet were basically the starting backcourt as rookies on that team. They lost in the first round. That's pretty much it.
All right. And then finally, Chris, the last question, and you always ask a question that has to do with the world beyond basketball. There is such a world. And this one was the very, very weighty topic of what's the best way to eat, what's the best conveyance for a heavy, loaded breakfast sandwich? And the choices you were given were Texas toast, biscuit, or croissant. What's your analysis there?
Well, from those choices, my choice would be the biscuit just because but it varies, right? Biscuits, unlike Texas toast and croissants, there's more variance with biscuits. And there's a real question of, like, does the biscuit...
It's got to hold together.
The biscuit handle the construction of a sandwich. So if you grant me a biscuit that works, I'll take the biscuit. My real answer is probably, in the absence of a biscuit that works, is not the croissant or the Texas toast. It's some other kind of good, like, crusty sandwich bread with some texture to it. Like, you know, put it on the griddle and get it sort of melty and crispy, and I'd probably go with that, but not necessarily Texas toast.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. Read a mailbag over there. Grizzlies got three games. Well, they go on an East Coast swing later this week. Jeffrey, he kind of settled where you settled, which was, you know what? Nothing's wrong with buttered toast on a breakfast sandwich.
Well, Dennis and I were also talking during the break. You and I...
Of course, you were talking to Dennis about food during the break.
Yes, Dennis, I'd say 90% of our conversation is about food. What did you eat this weekend? Right. Where'd you eat? Did we leave out English muffin?
Oh! Underrated!
Because you and I are both on the stance of, like, good... Store-bought English muffin
is pretty solid. It is true. You go get a store-bought bagel from the bread aisle, and it's a terrible bagel.
Not good.
Barely even a bagel, really. It's just bread in bagel shape.
It's got a hole in the middle.
Whereas the quintessential English muffin, the best English muffin, is in fact the mass-produced Thomas's English muffin, and it's not honestly close. And so you can get it anywhere, and then you can eat, try this, a burger on an English muffin.
Yes.
A tuna fish sandwich on an English muffin. You don't probably eat tuna fish, but tuna fish sandwich on an English muffin.
Jeff, I've been known to just...
Do you eat tuna?
No, my wife does. But I've been known to just slap some butter and jelly on that bad boy.
Tuna, yeah. I mean, English muffins are spectacular, mm-hmm. and they are...
It's a good breakfast sandwich, too.
It's honestly, it's like, compared to the... Didn't Burger King used to have a bagel? They have the croissant, which is
so
what they
I
have
don't remember
now.
Burger King did... McDonald's did. McDonald's had a steak bagel, and my dad, my dad would crush it.
Where's their English muffin? Oh, did he? He liked it.
Yeah, he would. It was, this was like a steak
sausage McMuffin with egg. That's what they call it. They don't just say a sausage egg McMuffin. It's called sausage McMuffin with egg. It's delicious. It's unbelievable, and it's on an English muffin. I think you guys have hit upon something.
There's nothing wrong with the egg McMuffin. Period.
No, I was driving the other day. And I had the dogs in the car.
Mm-hmm.
So I got myself a sausage McMuffin with egg.
Yep.
And I got the dogs an egg McMuffin that I split between them.
Between the three?
No, between the two dogs. They had the, they got the egg McMuffin.
Okay.
They got each half of an egg McMuffin, one gulp each. And I got the sausage McMuffin with egg.
Because the right standard driving trip when you have the dogs is we would always just find a Whataburger.
Uh-huh.
And so we would eat our Whataburger, and then at the end when we're getting after he gets the bathroom,
I never know when to feed the. Here's the problem: is that the dog starts looking at me and drooling as soon as I get the sandwich.
Well, I was going to ask which.
So do they? Feed them first, or do you feed them later, or what?
So what we used to do is we would stop, and that would be the bathroom. The dogs go to the bathroom,
and you feed them outside of the car,
right? So like, whoever's handling the dog, that person waits to eat, and then. We would eat and then feed the dog as we'd leave.
But see, I only eat in the car.
This
I
is a tough one for you.
I would never waste time
because your
not
dogs are
and
massive.
Simultaneously,
do they fight for inside positioning of who makes through
Gus now gets inside positioning. It's not really much of a fight anymore.
Right,
he's much the biggest. Yeah. All right, we got to take a break. Fish on Friday on Tuesday coming up next. 92.9 FM ESPN.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's. So thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code STYLE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code STYLE. Enjoy!
This President's Day, upgrade the look of your home without breaking your budget. Save up to 40% site-wide on brand new window treatments now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, is the better way to give your home the presidential treatment. Blinds.com makes it easy with free virtual consultations on your schedule and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Choose from trending woven wood shades or upgrade to motorized. Blinds.com has everything and more, all with upfront pricing and no hidden fees. Need help with installation? Blinds.com can handle it for you. Or DIY with expert guidance from our design pros. With over 25 million windows covered and our 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can count on Blinds.com to deliver results you'll love. Shop Blinds.com's President's Day Mega Sale Last Chance right now and save up to 40% site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Up to 40% off site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. for millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Charles Fishman, our man in Washington, D.C., author of 3 New York Times bestsellers, most recently One Giant Leap, about the extraordinary efforts of ordinary Americans to get us to the moon. Also a 3-time winner of the Gerald Loeb Award for Excellence in Business Writing and retired Mississippi River tugboat deckhand. I said that fast, Charles, because I know we got a lot to get to, including... You want to start
this morning, you've made me so hungry. I want to know where my biscuit and my Loeb are. You bring a biscuit, a breakfast biscuit to Jeffrey... I'm waiting.
I did. I brought him a breast.
Yelp delivers. I'm looking forward to it.
A plane crash. You want to start with a plane crash?
Well, you know, when something bad almost happens, this happens all the time with terrorist events that are averted or with school shootings that are averted. You know, it's a brief story, low on the page, online or whatever, for 3 minutes. Yesterday, this Delta Airlines regional jet, Bombardier, crashed at Toronto's Pearson Airport. Pearson Airport is like JFK or LaGuardia or DFW for Canada. Huge airport. Slams into the ground, flips over to the right, flips over on its on the top of the airplane as it's landing, catches fire. 80 people on the plane, not even a serious injury. They all got out. Okay, so we'll eventually learn what happened. There's now video where you can see the plane landing very hard.
Yeah.
It appears the landing gear on the right side of the plane may have collapsed. The plane immediately flips over. There was a 38-mile-an-hour crosswind, so wind blowing left to right across the runway as the plane was landing. If you get out of kilter, if your left wing ends up a little higher than your right wing, as when the landing gear collapses, you might just be flipped over. The wings broke off and the tail broke off, and all the passengers survive.
It's unbelievable, really.
Here's what happened. 20 years ago, the National Transportation Safety Board in the United States recommended that airplane seats be upgraded to survive 16 G forces 16 times gravity based on whoever was in the seats. They'd been 9 G. In a 9 G crash like this, somebody, an expert this morning said, instead of 80 people surviving, 20 people would have survived. The tracks the seats are bolted to, the seats themselves have, and the floors that everything is bolted to, were designed starting 25 years ago to survive 16 Gs. Without that, a seat comes loose, it then becomes a huge projectile. You know, right. Hurting the person in the seat and causing chaos with everybody else. And so that, by the way, the NTSB is a federal government agency. People say, what does the government ever do for me? Well, the government makes sure that planes are safe to fly in.
It's those cumbersome, pesky over-regulations that just save these lives.
Pesky over-regulations. And you know who supported this upgrade, among other the flight attendants, the pilots, and eventually the airlines. Here's two other things that were kind of amazing. The plane flipped over. You can watch the video. It's unbelievable. Again, the wings ripped off, the tail ripped off, the whole thing caught fire. They could smell jet fuel immediately. The doors of the plane opened, even though it flipped over in a violent crash. The door frames were strong enough, and the doors were strong enough that everything held up. Imagine your car flipping over, and then you'd be able to pop open the door. And the
I can barely pop it open now, Charles. I'll be honest.
You can barely pop it open now.
Go ahead.
And then everybody's hanging upside down. Imagine landing, and all of a sudden you're strapped in your seat, hanging from the ceiling. The crew members, the flight attendants, were able to get the doors open, even though they were upside down. They knew how to do it upside down, and they got everybody out literally within minutes. 80 people evacuated in several minutes, and the fire crew was there putting out the fire even as the doors were being opened. So
those damn Canadians, too, really.
Training, a plane built to spec the right way. We mocked the Boeing plane where the door popped out in the middle of flight. This is exactly the opposite. Everything worked right. By noon today, it's not a story anymore, but I just want to all hail the crew, the people who built this plane, and all the way back, the federal regulators who figured out that the seats and the bolts and the tracks and the floors needed to be strong enough to survive. 80 people alive instead of 20.
All right. So you ask what the government can do for you. And now, listen, these are polarizing times. There's a lot we can talk about that might get some people riled up one side or the other. But I think there's a Connecticut state senator who has a really important issue
he's
going to address.
Do you know his name?
No.
His name is Martin Looney.
Ha!
Connecticut state senator.
People understand
Martin
why it
Looney.
Matters when they hear what he's doing.
He's actually the highest ranking state senator in Connecticut, 44 years in the Connecticut House and Senate. And he has introduced a bill of urgency and consensus. He's fed up with going to the movie and then sitting there for 15 or 20 or 25 minutes waiting for the movie to start. Senator Looney's bill would require movie theaters to tell you when the movie itself
starts.
Not just the previews.
I wonder if that is. What is the average lag is there? You go to a 7 o'clock movie. When's the main feature?
I assume the movie starts at 7:20 now. As somebody recently said on Twitter mocking all of this, you have to sit through the ads about the ads. They advertise the ad service while you're sitting there. Then they show you can have your ad here. Then they show you the ads. Then they show you the trailers. Then they show you the movie. He's not saying don't do all that.
You just said, tell us when it starts. Just tell us when it starts.
People hire a babysitter. They end up paying half an hour. Not to short sheet the babysitter. You're paying half an hour more. You're racing through dinner. He's gotten so much attention. He said, look, I believe in child tax credits and, we're working on the tax system in Connecticut. There are lots of important things going on in this year's session. You're paying attention to this. It's gotten national attention. But you know what? They're wasting our time, and it's a simple solution. Interestingly, a different Connecticut legislator introduced exactly the same bill 17 years ago, and it died. I think it's going to pass.
Killed. Okay.
And then it'll migrate.
Workers, U.S. workers.
As a national leader.
U.S. workers coming back to work in the office. Is that right?
Isn't this what everybody's been waiting for? 60% of even the data is that even those who have permission to work outside the office, 60% of the time they work inside the office. Also, there's this fiction that people who work at home for any company or for the U.S. government don't work. But in fact, most people who work at home for the government are actually people who are on helplines with Social Security, with the IRS, and they're monitored all the time. So they are working. So it's ridiculous.
But okay,
idea that
February 21st, you got to be
due,
back.
They're due back at the office February 21st, 30 days from the executive order January 22nd. Here's the problem. There is no place. There is no office. Almost half of them, there is no office space for them because after the pandemic, just like everybody else, the federal government started downsizing its office space. Thousands, tens of thousands of federal workers hired with the understanding that they would telework to save the federal government the cost of getting them office space. Now they've been ordered back to the office. Donald Trump's own head of building services for the government says we have reduced office space by 50%. Quote unquote.
Well, here's the good news.
Gonna be,
there's going to be fewer of them
on top of each other.
Here's the good news. There's going to be fewer of them. So, there you go.
There's going to be fewer of them. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. They're ordered. They're going to be standing around with their arms crossed. Maybe we'll develop a new device for them where you can work on your laptop standing up with a little harness around your neck. Anyway, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
How are we doing with the Greenland Panama purchases and all that?
This is so great. Donald Trump is obsessed
with buying Greenland.
With taking Greenland
from
Denmark.
He likes a good deal. He wants to.
There's not going to be a deal. There's not going to be a deal. But you know what has happened in Denmark?
What's happening in Denmark?
Greenland is part of the territory of Denmark. Denmark has mounted an effort to buy California from the United States and Donald Trump.
I bet they'd sell it. They'd probably sell it.
Donald Trump would happily sell California.
Oh.
Donald Trump lost California bigly.
Yeah, he would happily sell that hellhole that is California to Greenland.
Here's what the petition says. Have you ever looked at a map and thought, you know what Denmark needs? More sunshine, more palm trees, and roller skates.
Fair.
They have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to make that dream reality. They're offering America $1 trillion for California.
Pro
tip.
Yeah, go ahead. What?
California is worth more than $1 trillion. And the Danes, the petition has 250,000 signatures in a country of only 6 million people. That's a lot. And they've offered to, if the deal goes through, they're going to give every Californian a lifetime supply of Danish pastry. That's got to be the deal. Is that really true?
Did you just throw that through? You just threw that in there.
No.
Is that true?
I actually wondered
if the Danish pastry is from is it Danish?
Well, I looked it up because I knew you would ask me that question. Danish pastry was perfected by Danish bakers, but it was invented by Austrian bakers who moved to Denmark.
We just learned this, Jeffrey. What else was the Austrians also invented croissants, and then the French claimed them? It turned out these clever Austrians are very good with baked food.
They really had it going on.
But they're getting robbed left and right.
One thing I don't think Californians are going to be happy about, they intend to rename Disneyland Hans Christian Andersen Land.
That's good.
But maybe that's negotiable.
We're ordering off of children's menu in increasing numbers. Is this true? I don't think you're allowed to.
I thought you were saying this for the last one. You're giving away the best
one. I'm sorry.
And also, I told you how to set it up,
paying attention. As you know, I've had other things on my mind recently. You want to go to Southwest Airlines?
No, I want to go to Social Security.
Okay. Social Security.
So in the last week, Elon Musk has been tweeting furiously that he's quote-unquote discovered that millions of people over the age of 99
I've seen that. And I've got to tell you, I'm outraged. I don't want dead people getting Social Security. And if he's finding dead people getting Social Security or people over the age of 150, because I'm going to bet those people aren't actually alive either, I don't want them getting Social Security.
Right, what he's suggesting is that it's all fraud and their relatives are collecting it. The chart he tweeted indicated that 25 million people over the age of 99 are receiving Social Security. There's only 52 million people total getting Social Security. Here's the problem. His table was simply a table of Social Security data listing people who don't have a death date on file with the Social Security. Not people receiving benefits, people who had a Social Security number whose death date was never filed. That's because until 1976, 1978, The database didn't record the death date. You don't receive Social Security when you're dead. In fact, the system is that funeral homes are required to report deaths directly to the Social Security. There's very little chance of fraud here. And there is a table that's produced every month. We know exactly how many people receive Social Security every month. And in December, there were 89,106 people, 99 years old and over. Just, we're talking about 6 weeks ago, we have the data already, 89,106, 99 and over, who received Social Security, not 25 million. By the way, something else.
That's amazing, by the way. There's 89,000 people.
99 and over, except it's only about, what, 1,200, 1,300 people per state? You think about Florida. You think about my mom is about to be 91. Your parents were approaching that age. It's not that. I don't think it's that remarkable. What's remarkable is Elon Musk is a genius but doesn't actually understand how to read charts. He missed another thing. Starting 10 years ago, just to avoid this problem, the Social Security system put in place an automatic turnoff for benefits for anybody who reaches their 115th birthday unless you step in and verify. So no one over the age of 115 receives benefits unless they've actually proved that they are in fact alive. Here's the problem. He has all these 19 and 20 and 21-year-olds looking at the data, and Social Security uses an ancient coding language called COBOL.
Right.
And if there is no death date entered, COBOL by design defaults to the year 1875 as the birth date. For complicated coding reasons, these kids have never seen COBOL. And you know why we use an ancient database to run Social Security?
To stymie the hackers.
Because of efficiency. Because it would cost tens of millions or hundreds of millions to migrate the whole thing over, and that database still works. So I don't know whether that's efficiency or inefficiency, but ladies and gentlemen, there are not even 100,000 people receiving Social Security, and there's very little fraud in Social Security. Lots of fraud in Medicare and Medicaid. There's not very much fraud in Social Security. Okay, where are we going next?
I've lost. Charles sends, Inside Baseball, Charles sends me a list here before we start. It's the only segment that we actually prepare for. And now, you with Southwest Airlines, you want to do that one?
Oh, we can do it really quick. This was kind of sad news. Southwest Airlines announced yesterday that it is laying off 1,750 headquarters workers, including 11 senior executives. Why is that remarkable? It's 15% of the corporate staff, so they've got 12,000 people. They're laying off 1,750. Southwest Airlines has never laid off anybody for the economic, business, stock price reasons in the history of the company. So you think about 9/11, you think about the 2008-2009 recession, you think about the pandemic. In the pandemic, they have never laid off anybody. The airline was born in 1972. Lots of things are changing at Southwest. You know, they're about to start. They're not about to. They have announced that the open seating is going away. That assigned seating starts next year, 2026. You'll be able to buy tickets with assigned seating starting July 1st.
So an extra $69, you can sit where you want, or $139 or whatever else. So damn irritating.
That's how it's been.
We're going to get to the food thing in a minute. But before I did that, did you watch the I heard you were on with Jeffrey last week. Did you hear you talked about SNL. Did you watch the SNL 50 celebration?
I watched it as long as I could. I watched it until 11:05 when I was 3 hours. It still had 25 minutes to go. They wore me out. And whatever, I enjoyed it. To me, it was just two things were striking to me. It was very well organized. It was not chaos. I couldn't understand how they were going to do 3 hours. It was essentially a big, glorious SNL with all of these characters. Chevy Chase was there, and Eddie.
It's
Murphy
funny though.
Was
there a signature hilarious great moment? Was there a great
to me? To me, the signature hilarious great moment was a song by Adam Sandler paying tribute
it was good.
To 50 years of SNL.
It yeah, was, Adam
if you haven't watched it, just Google Adam Sandler, SNL.
Well, what I like, too, is the way that song ended was there's debate about which was the great cast, but we all know which was the greatest cast. But we all know it was the first one, which gave us everything that followed. And I think that's true. It, you know, I can't even particularly...
Well, it's true, but also the first cast included Dan Aykroyd, John Belushi, Chevy Chase, Jane Curtin, Garrett Morris, Lorraine Newman, Gilda Radner. Every one of those people is a name.
It's amazing.
So that's
just
kind
incredible.
Of
okay.
Kind of amazing.
The fast food news. The fast food news. You have fast food news that we.
The fast food news is you kind of gave it away. There's a new trend: adults ordering off the kids' menu. I don't think it's a new thing to do, but it is. It is jumping.
You have stats on this? Where do you? How are you aware of this?
This is all from the Wall Street Journal. This is. Listeners should be able to pick these out. This is a brilliant Wall Street Journal story. What a wonderful thing. Total restaurant visits are still down a little bit compared to pre-pandemic 2019, 5 years ago. But ordering off the children's menu by adults, according to measurements by a data firm, up 28%. Yelp searches for the phrase kids menu, the highest in December 2024 of any month in the last 60 months. So why do you think that is?
Because it's cheaper.
There's two reasons. It's cheaper. And actually, for some people, the portions are just out of control. And a kid's meal...
They don't want the giant portions.
They don't want all that. You order a soda, you order a Frosty, you order a French fries. It's just overwhelming. The kid's meals often come without French fries. They come with carrot sticks or apple slices or something. It's interesting. They say that some people are worried about being busted, about being scolded, and the new world is makes it all much easier. You just order, of course, through the drive-thru. They can't scold you that way. Or you order online.
You don't have to prove you got a kid. You don't have to prove you got a kid. There's probably more fraud. More fraud! We got to get to the bottom of that one next.
Uh-huh. Offer kids meals for adults, you know, as a special promotion. So the fast food places are actually getting with the program.
Right. Thanks,
ladies,
Charles.
And gentlemen,
appreciate
have
it.
A
on
great,
Twitter
a great
or X at C Fishman. And always you going to say have a great whatever. Have a great whatever. Oh, I'll tell you this. If you're looking for a new financial institution, you want a mortgage, you want a home loan, a car loan, you're sick of your present place that's changed names 3 times and charges you all these ridiculous fees and try Leaders Credit Union. That's what we did, Claire and I. Went to the Bartlett location. They've got a brand new location in Arlington. That just opened this year. Grand opening in Arlington. Download the app. It's a fabulous app because it is a credit union. And so you're a member. You're not just a customer. You're a member. And every dollar that is generated goes right back into better fees. Better rates, better technology, better service. Leaders Credit Union. Check them out online at leaderscu.com/ESPN. Jeffrey, what is coming up next?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Jessica Benson joins their program today. Tim Murray will be with me on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Jeff will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow for Now Work is Done.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes, and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Nick's, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Nick's Menswear, your friend in style.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing digital deals for members. Signature Farms chicken, split breasts, drumsticks, or thighs, buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Or a wheat variety bread, 24-ounce selected varieties, buy one, get one for free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. And Progresso soup, 18 to 19-ounce selected varieties, buy two, get three free of equal or lesser value when you buy five. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.